So I will talk about the extreme value statistics. So this first slide is a motivation why we want to study extreme events. And extreme value statistics is a branch of probability theory dealing with extreme events, and which are typically very rare events, but when they happen, they can have devastating consequences. So these are three examples of extreme events which are a big deal. And for instance, in epidemic spreading, a very rare mutation of a virus can lead to a new epidemic wave. Or in finance, a financial crisis can really affect world economy. And finally, it's very important to study rare events in climate studies, because in the context of climate change, extreme weather events like heat waves have become more and more common and more important. So it's it's crucial to understand the role played by extreme events and in particular their statistical properties. So let's start with a practical problem. Imagine that you are an engineer and your task is to build a bridge over a river. So you have at your disposal some data. So this, for instance, is the water level of the Nile River near Cairo over many centuries. And your goal is to decide, for instance, the height of the bridge. So one first thing you could do to study this data is to study what the average height of the river is. And the average value is plotted here by the black line. And to do that, you have a very strong result from mathematics, from probability theory, which is the central limit theorem. And what the central limit theorem is telling you is that if you have a bunch of random variables, x1, x2, xn, you sum them up. And if you have many variables, you are guaranteed that the sum of these variables, sn, will converge to a Gaussian distribution or a normal distribution, which is shown here, and it has the typical bell shape that you might have seen many times already. So to give you a specific example, a numerical example, if we consider a probability density function p of x, which is telling me that the probability, I can find the random variable x anywhere in the interval 0, 1 with the uniform probability, and I will not find this variable anywhere else. So the probability is zero outside this interval. So it's like this box probability distribution. So what I can do is that in my computer, I can generate many replicas of this random variable, independent of each other. I sum them up and I plot the probability distribution of the sum. So if I start with just one variable, n will be the number of variables. If I start with just one variable, I have my box distribution. But you can see that as n increases, the probability of the sum converges very fast to the bell shape, which is the Gaussian distribution. And the important fact is that this is completely independent from the probability distribution from which I started from. So that if I start from some probability distribution which is completely different, like this two-box distribution, it might take longer to converge to the Gaussian distribution, but the result eventually will be exactly the same. So if I have many variables, I'm guaranteed that I will converge to a Gaussian distribution. So this is a very important piece of math. It characterizes the average value. But there is a problem, because usually we have a finite amount of data, and the central limit theorem then only applies to deviations from the average value which are small enough. But in many practical cases, as in the case of the bridge, we don't care about the average behavior. We care about the extreme events. For instance, when the water level is very high because the river is flooding. And we want to study what is the statistics of these extreme events, like in this case, the maximal water level over many centuries. And we would like to find an equivalent theorem as the central limit theorem, but which applies to extremes, which is in some sense a universal result, because we don't know maybe exactly how to model the fluctuations on the water level. So we would like to find a result which is independent of the specific way in which we model our system. So this is the general motivation. And the setting that I will consider is the following, which can apply to many different systems. So I have a collection of random variables, x1, x2, xn, and the index I in xi indicates time. So x1 comes before x2 and so on. So this could be, for instance, the water level of a river over many, many years. And to describe these random variables, I need to write down a model. And the model is given by their joint probability distribution. So this function of many variables, px1, x2, xn, is called the joint probability density function or joint probability distribution, and is telling me what is the probability to observe a specific sequence of events, so x1, x2, xn. And this is the modeling part. So I start from a system, I create a model, and the model is encoded in this probability distribution. And this probability distribution is telling me about the correlations and the interdependencies between different variables. And then in extreme value statistics, what we usually study, for instance, is the global maximum of these variables, which I will call capital M, the maximal entry of this sequence. And then what we are asking is, given a model, so given a joint probability distribution, what can we say about the statistical properties of the maximum M? Or there are other quantities that we will study in this presentation, for instance, the time at which the global maximum occurs. So we might ask, we don't really care about how big these extreme events are, but we care about when they will happen in time. Is it more likely to see the extreme event at the very beginning of the sequence, in the middle, or at the end? And this is, a very simple practical application of this is to finance. If you imagine that you need to sell a stock in the stock market, the best time to do so is when the price is the highest. So it's a practical problem to understand typically, or in a simple model, at what time the price will be the highest, right? And another quantity which is of interest in extreme value statistics are records. So almost every day we read in the news about a new record being set, either in sport or, unfortunately, now in climate. And within a sequence of random variables, we'll say that an entry xi is a record if it is larger than all the previous entries. So, and this has many applications. In climate studies, for instance, we know that it's particularly important to study the statistical properties of records because due to climate change, new records are being set every year almost. So here you can see the average temperature of globally as a function of time over many years, and you can see that there is a clear trend, so new records are being set more often than they should. And another example is very common, is that of sports. So if you consider the best time to run a marathon for each edition of the Olympics in the last 20 editions. So you can see that the time has gone down over the years, and the red dots indicate records. So it would be great to have a statistical understanding on how many records we should expect in a given sequence and so on. So this is the general setup. These are the three main quantities that I will talk about: the global maximum, the time of the maximum, and the number of records. And to make progress, let's start with the simplest possible model, which is the one where the variables are independent and identically distributed. Independent means that there are no correlations between the variables. So if I know the value of x1, this doesn't tell me anything about the value of x2. And identically distributed means that these n variables, they all come from the very same probability distribution, which I will call a P of x. Mathematically speaking, this means that their joint probability density function, px1 to xn, is just the product of the marginal probability distribution, p of x1, p of x2, p of xn. So the probability of observing the whole sequence from x1 to xn is just the probability to observe the first one times the second times the third and so on. And this might seem like a very simplistic model, but it's a very successful one in physics. One example is the random energy model by Derrida, which was used to understand the properties of disordered systems like glassy materials and so on, and is based on an assumption which is precisely this one. So we're very lucky because in the case of independent and identically distributed variables, there exists a theorem which is very important. It's called the extreme value theorem. And it is the counterpart of the central limit theorem for extremes. What this theorem is telling me is that if I take n random variables, independent and identically distributed, and I want to study the distribution of the maximum m, this distribution of m cannot be anything. It can only be one out of three probability distributions. So in the case of the central limit theorem, we saw that the distribution of the sum of these variables will be Gaussian. In this case, we know that the distribution of the maximum will be either Gamble, Fréchet, or Weibull, depending on how the marginal probability of a single variable behaves. So if the probability of P of X is the probability of observing a value X for a single variable, if this probability decays exponentially or faster, I will be in the Gamble universality class, which is this continuous blue line. If instead the probability is decaying as a power law for large X, so it's more likely to see very big numbers, it will be in the Fréchet universality class. And finally, if there is an upper bound, so there is a maximal value that my random variables can take, I will be in the Weibull universality class. So let's consider just the first one for simplicity, the Gamble distribution, which is the one you will converge to if you start from random variables which have a distribution which is decaying exponentially or faster for larger values. And the distribution of the maximum in this case has a very, very simple formula, which is this one, e to the minus m minus e to the minus m. And it is shown here. So it has this kind of still a bell shape, but it is kind of skewed on one side. So one of the tails, the right one is decaying slower than the other. So let's go and do again a numerical example, as we did before for the central limit theorem. So in this case, I consider a probability distribution which is exponentially decaying. So we expect to end up in the Gamble universality class. So again, what I do in my computer is that I generate n replicas of these random variables, and I compute the maximum, and I generate an histogram for the probability of the maximum. And you will see that as n increases, the probability distribution of the maximum converges to the universal Gamble law. And it is universal because if I start from a completely different distribution, like this one with two different peaks, maybe it will take longer, but if n is large enough, I will end up again in exactly the same probability distribution. So at this point, you might wonder, I told you about many numerical examples, so these are just synthetic data that I generate on my laptop, but is this any useful for real data? And to answer this question, I have to tell you about a little piece of history of Oxford, and in particular about the Radcliffe Observatory, which was the university observatory from 1773 to 1934. And if you want to see it, it's just about a 5-minute walk from here. And the astronomers of the observatory in the 18th century, they started to collect weather data for a specific reason, which was that refraction, which is influenced by atmospheric condition, can affect astronomical measurement. So they had to have a precise understanding of the local weather condition in order to ensure that their measurements were accurate. So they started collecting data about temperature and pressure and other things as well, and they are still doing that. So this data collection has continued for more than two centuries. They have the longest running record of temperature and rainfall data for a single site in Britain, running continuously from 1813. So you can see here a picture of their data. And here you can see a handwritten entry of this data set from November 14th, 1813. And you can see that there is some data about temperature, about pressure, wind, rain, and apparently that day was very dark and rainy, not surprisingly. So today these data have been digitalized and they are freely accessible on the internet. So what I did is that I just went and downloaded the whole data set. And I took, for instance, I wanted to study extreme value statistics, so I took the maximal temperature in October in Oxford for every year in the last 200 years, and this is what is plotted here. So each dot is the maximal temperature registered in Oxford in October. And you can see that, I mean, you cannot tell too much from this data, to be honest, but what you can tell is that 2011 had a very hot October. And the other thing is that if you plot this data as an histogram, so if you build an histogram from this data, this is what you get. And this is surprisingly close to the Gamble distribution. And you can fit a Gamble pretty easily to this data. So even though these data are not independent and identically distributed, this theory still tells us something useful about the data, and it can predict the probability of rare events. So the other thing I want to tell you about in the context of independent variables is about records. So again, I consider independent variables, and I want to answer this question, which is, given a sequence of n independent random numbers, how many records do we expect to see? So it's a very practical question, and we will be able to answer this question and to compute this quantity exactly within this slide. So it's a very simple computation. So the first thing we have to observe is that we want to compute what is the probability that xi, the ith variable that I observe, is a record. So if xi is a record, it means that it is the biggest variable so far. And these variables are independent, so any of them could be the maximum with equal probability. So since I observed I variables, the probability that the last one is a record is just 1 over I, because it has to be uniform and it has to sum to 1. So the average number of records, I can obtain it just by summing over I. So the average number of records is the sum over I of the probability that that particular time had a record. So it's sum over I from 1 to n, sum over 1 over I from I goes from 1 to n. And if I approximate this sum with an integral, if n is large, I can do that, I get that the average number of records is growing as the log of n. And let me point out that this is also universal. So this doesn't depend on the particular distribution of the single variables. So it's a very robust result. And this is what you would expect. So if you observe, for instance, 20 random variables, you would expect around 3 or 4 records. So it's a very slow growth, and this makes sense because later in time, it will be harder to break a new record because the last record will be higher. And if you try to apply this to the sports data that I showed before, we had that in the last 20 editions of the Olympics, there have been 7 marathon records. And so the independent theory doesn't work in this case. We would expect 3 or 4 and we get 7, so it's very off. And if we apply the same idea to the temperature data that I showed before, it still doesn't work. So in the last 200 years, there are 9 records, but log of 200 is like around 5. So the independent theory doesn't work in this case. So the independent theory is very useful as a benchmark, and it works in some cases, but it has limitations because in the real world there are correlations and you need to include them in the model often. So what we want to do now is to include correlations in the model and to get a more complicated model which takes into account that different variables are not independent. The simplest model that you can consider with correlations is the weakly correlated model. And so first of all, let me say that in general, there's no general technique to study correlated systems. So we have to go on a case-by-case basis. And the simplest model that you can consider is the one where correlations are weak. What does that mean? So that quantity that I have on the left-hand side is the correlation between variable xi and variable xj. And what you have to know is that this number will be 0 if the variables are independent, and it will be non-zero, positive or negative, if these variables are correlated. So if I assume that the correlations are decaying in time exponentially faster, over a typical time scale, which is the correlation time scale xi, what I will have is that two random variables which are farther away in time then Xi, they are basically independent. So I can still make progress using the independent theory. And to do that, imagine that I have a very, very long sequence. What I can do is that I can divide this sequence into different intervals of size Xi, similarly to what is done in statistical physics with the Kadanoff argument. And since the correlations decay over this time Xi, the different intervals are almost independent. So if I define the maxima within each interval, these maxima m1, m2, mk will be independent random variables. And I can still apply the theory of independent and identically distributed random variables because the global maximum is just the maximum of the maxima. So I can still use the theory that I showed before, but the problem is that when correlations do not decay exponentially in time, so when I have strongly correlated random variables, this doesn't work anymore. So here I wanted to present just three examples of systems with strongly correlated random variables, which have been studied quite a lot in physics. So the first one are random matrices, which have been used a lot in physics to describe the complicated Hamiltonian of heavy nuclei. So the basic idea there is that you don't know, this Hamiltonian is so complicated that you don't know exactly what it will look like, so you approximate it with a random matrix. And it actually works. And and in this case, for instance, the maximal eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian has been studied quite a lot in the context of extreme value statistics. The second one are fluctuating interfaces, which have been used a lot to describe the interface of growing colonies of bacteria or growing tumors. And it's quite important to study the statistical properties of these interfaces. And in the context of extreme value statistics, for instance, the maximal height of an interface has been studied, and it is a very crucial quantity. And finally, random walks, which will be the focus of the rest of my talk. So let me define, first of all, what a random walk is. So here I'm plotting the position of a random walker over time. So xk is the position of the random walker as a function of k. It's a motion in one dimension. And the evolution of the position satisfies a very simple rule, which is telling me that the position at step k is equal to the position at the previous step, k minus 1, plus a jump, which I will call eta k. So I will assume that the jumps of this random walker are again independent and identically distributed random variables, but now the variables xk are strongly correlated. Because if you write down the joint probability distribution, it will have a more complicated form, which is not just the one of independent variables. And there are actually strong correlations in this model which do not decay exponentially in time. So talking about random walks, as you probably know, Oxford is full of beautiful pubs, and many of them, I mean, some of them, like the one in this picture, are just next to a river. So if you imagine that there is a drunk student, classical example, after a few pints, he wants to go home, but he's drunk. So he will move with random steps either towards the river or away from it. So my question for you is now, after n steps, what is the probability that he's still on land, it hasn't fallen into the river? We can answer this question very precisely by modeling the motion of the student as a random walk. So now the river is this red line that corresponds to x equal to 0. And what we want to study is the survival probability, so the probability that the student will survive, which I will call Qn. And Qn is just the probability that x1 is greater than 0, x2 is greater than 0, up to xn, given that the starting position was 0. And of course, this probability distribution will be a complicated function of the probability distribution of the steps, p of eta. So if I take steps which are drawn from a Gaussian distribution, I will get, in principle, something different than if I get steps from a uniform probability distribution. And in this formula, you don't need to understand the details. These thetas are heavy side theta functions, which are one if the argument is positive and zero otherwise, but this doesn't really matter. What matters is that Qn is a complicated function of P. And P can be anything, really. So I would expect Qn to depend on P, but the very surprising result, which is known as the Sparre-Anderson theorem, is that Qn is completely universal once again. So it's completely independent of P of eta, and this is true for any n. So in this case, it's not true only for large values of n, it's true as for any value of n. And it's given by this very simple formula. So Sparre-Anderson was a Swedish mathematician, and he proved this in 1954. And the formula is surprisingly simple. So many people thought that the proof of this formula should be simple as well. And there have been, while the original proof by Sparre-Anderson is a kind of complicated combinatorial proof, so there have been many attempts to prove this formula in a simpler way, but they came up with different proofs which were way more complicated than the original one. So if we now plot what Qn is as a function of n, so what is the probability that the student has survived for n steps, you can see that initially the probability is 1/2, because the student is starting just on the edge of the river. So if it goes in the wrong direction at the first step, it will immediately fall in the river. And then it decreases to 0. So if you wait long enough, the student will fall. And the survival probability is, I'm telling you about this because this is a crucial quantity in extreme value statistics, because it can be used as a building block to study more complicated quantities like the distribution of the time of the maximum. And this is what I will tell you about. So let's consider once again a random walk of this type. I let the random walk evolve for n steps. And I want to know what is the probability distribution of the time of the maximum, t max. So what is the probability that the time of the maximum is either at the beginning or at the end or in the middle, for instance. So we will be able to compute this distribution exactly by using the result for the survival probability. So the first observation that we need to make is that almost by definition, the random walker cannot go above its maximum. It's almost tautological, but so the random walker cannot cross this red barrier, which is the maximum. Now, let's split this trajectory in two parts. So the first part is from time 0 to time t max, and the second part is from time t max to time n. So what's going on in the second part? The random walker starts from the maximum, and it has to stay below the maximum for some number of steps. And this is precisely what the survival probability is telling you. So the probability of this part of the trajectory is precisely the survival probability. In this case, it's Qn minus Tmax, because there are n minus Tmax steps on that side. And in the first part, instead, I can apply a very similar argument. I just have to go back in time. So if I start from the maximum, the random walker has to stay below the maximum for Tmax steps. So the probability of the first part is just the survival probability for Tmax steps. And the probability of the time of the maximum is just the product of these two probabilities. Very simple. Okay? So if you remember that Q is a universal quantity, this is telling us that the distribution of Tmax is also universal. Doesn't depend on the specific way in which I model my system. And if I plot this quantity, the probability distribution of Tmax, it will look something like this in the limit of large n. So what I can understand from this plot is that it is more likely to find the maximum either at the very beginning or at the very end of the interval that I'm considering. Because the probability is diverging, actually. The probability is going almost to infinity in the limit of large n when Tmax is going to 0 or Tmax is going to n, which is the final time of the interval. And this is telling me that there are way more trajectories which are either increasing, like this, reaching the maximum at the final time, or decreasing like this and reaching the maximum at the very beginning. So you might think that if we go and model the evolution of the price in the stock market just as a random walk, the best time to sell a stock is either in the morning or in the late or in the afternoon. But before you do that, you have to keep in mind what is the distribution of the time of the minimum, which is exactly the same. So you have to be very careful by describing the stock market as a random walk. It's more complicated than that. So in the last few minutes of my presentation, I want to tell you about some new results. So far I presented some classical results of extreme value statistics. So I would like to tell you about some more recent developments and some of my research in this field, which is done in the context of active particles. So first of all, let me tell you what active matter and active particles are. So active matter describes systems like colonies of bacteria, which are composed of many individual units. And these units are able to absorb energy from the system through food, for instance, converting this energy into some form of work. In the case of the bacteria, this work is just persistent motion. And this is very different to what is usually considered in physics, for instance, Brownian motion, because the bacteria move in a persistent way, while Brownian motion is just moving in a random way due to collisions with the molecules of the fluid surrounding it. And crucially, these bacteria are out of equilibrium because they are continuously consuming energy, while Brownian motion is at equilibrium. So we have a lot of tools and techniques from thermodynamics and statistical mechanics to describe equilibrium systems. But all of these techniques do not apply to non-equilibrium systems. And the reason for that is that there is a continuous absorption of energy. And in other words, active matter is alive, passive matter is dead. And it's crucial to understand the statistical properties of active particles. And this is what I did during my PhD, and by considering the run and tumble particle model, which is describing in a very simplified way the motion of E. coli bacteria, which is shown in the lower animation. This is experimental data. So these bacteria, the way they move is that they typically move in a fixed direction, in a persistent way, with almost constant velocity for some amount of time, and then they change direction suddenly. This is why this is called the run and tumble motion. And to model it, I will just start with the simplest possible model. So I assume that I have a bacterium which is starting from a barrier, which is this red line here. And initially, this bacterium will choose a direction uniformly at random in space, and it will start moving in that direction for some time. And after some time, it will tumble. So it will pick a new direction again uniformly at random. And I will assume that these tumbling events, these changes of direction, occur at a constant rate gamma, meaning that on average, for each second, I expect to see 1/γ events or changes of direction, but there can be fluctuations. It's actually what is called a Poisson process. And I will also consider velocity fluctuations in the speed of the particle, which are described by sine probability distribution W, but this is not very important. And I will consider this motion in one or two or three dimensions, and D is the dimension of the system. What I'm showing here is the motion in two dimensions. So in this case, one first step to understand the statistical properties of this motion is to study the survival probability, which I will define in the following way. As the probability that the x component of the particle does not change sign up to time t. In two dimensions, this is the probability that the random walker or the run and tumble particle doesn't cross the barrier for a time t. So this is a process which is defined in continuous time. And the survival probability was first computed in 95 in the simplest possible case, which is one dimension, so the motion is just on a line, and constant velocity. And it is given by this formula, where I0 and I1 are modified Bessel function, but it's something you can plot. And it looks like this. So initially, the survival probability is 1/2 for the same reason as before, because half of the times the particle will immediately cross the wall, and then it decreases to 0. So I wanted to study this problem more in general, so for higher dimensions and also for velocity fluctuations of the particle. So I first did simulations in 1D, and not too surprisingly, I got that the simulations agree with the theory. And then I repeated the simulations in D equal to 2, and I was quite surprised to get exactly the same result. So at first I thought that I had a bug in my code, but I checked very carefully. It took me a long time, but this was not the case. And doing simulations in D equal to 3, I got again the same result. And when I included velocity fluctuations in the speed of the particle in my model, I got once again the very same result. So the numerical simulations were suggesting that the result is in some sense universal, independent of the details of the model. And keep in mind that this is a non-trivial statement because many other quantities in this model, for instance, the position distribution of the particle, the probability to find the particle at position x at time t, is not universal. This depends strongly on which dimension I'm considering. There is a curve for d equal to 4, which is something you can simulate on a computer, but doesn't really make sense. But it is strongly dependent on d. And this looks a lot like what we saw before for random walks, the Sparre-Anderson theorem, which was also a universal result. But it was not obvious how to apply this result to the run-and-tumble particle model for many technical reasons. For instance, the run-and-tumble particle model is defined in continuous time, while the Sparre-Anderson theorem applies only to discrete time random walks. But we were able to actually develop a mapping from the continuous time motion of the run-and-tumble particle to a discrete time random walk. And we were able to show that actually it is the Sparre-Anderson theorem that is behind this universality. And we saw before that the survival probability can be used as a building block to consider more complicated quantities in extreme value statistics. And this is the case also for the run-and-tumble particle model. So using this building block, the survival probability, we were able to show that the time of the maximum for this random process, which is the run-and-tumble particle motion, is also universal. And the average number of records for this model is also a universal quantity. In these plots, I'm showing the blue line is the theory, and the different symbols, which kind of overlap with each other, are the simulations, and they all fall into the very same curve. On the left, I'm plotting the cumulative probability of the time of the maximum, so the probability that the maximum was less than some value t prime as a function of t prime. And here I have the number of records. So, and this is again a very non-trivial result because we have seen before that many other quantities in this model are not universal. So there is something special about these extreme value statistics quantities. So to conclude, I presented to you different simple models. And from this, I hope that we have built an intuition on how extreme events behave in a statistical way. And these results have many applications to finance, physics, evolution theory even. And so it's a very exciting and interdisciplinary field of study. And the crucial point that I want to make is that often these results were universal, independent of the specific way in which we model the system. And this is very important because often we model the system in a way which is not accurate because we don't have access to the full information about the system. So we have to make assumptions. And if we get a universal result, we are guaranteed that our results are robust to errors in the way we model the system. So as a final question, as I mentioned before, there is no general theory for extreme value statistics in correlated systems. And as a very ambitious question, we would like to find or to explore possible direction to find one. And with this, I want to thank you for your attention.